And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. Let's go! Here on a Friday! Let's go!
Yes.
I am ready, man. Let's rock it today. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is the show. Steve thought he was hopped up on caffeine. I had a coffee with a shot of espresso. Holy cow.
Boom diggity.
Keep me away from those.
So
that
we
is
got
dangerous.
So we started having this. Marty and Duffer were finishing up the show. We started talking about what's going on in the NFL, and this thing's out where the Houston Texans, who hired David Culley last year because, and I'll just be blunt, and we've talked about it. We think they hired David Culley not because he's not a good coach, but because nobody else would say yes. He's the first guy they offered it to who would say yes, who didn't politely say no thanks. Well, they could hire him, and David Culley did a nice job for them this year.
All things
a very nice job. Yeah. And they fired him, right? Right after the Dolphins fired Brian Flores. So you think, well, maybe the Texans are thinking about that. Well, that doesn't happen. Now, who are they interviewing? Josh McCown, who, by the way, folks, if you don't know, he was a very nice player. A little bit of a journeyman quarterback. Had a chance to start in a couple of different plays. Played for like eight teams. Had a long career. Great guy, great leader, good teammate, all of that. Never coached a day in his life. Now he's interviewing out like a bolt of out of the blue. He's interviewing for head coaching jobs in the NFL, the Texans.
I could tell it bothered you.
Are you kidding me?
Nobody's kidding.
Josh apparently. McCown. Let me just say this. Usually you start with the hot candidates and go down from there. The Texans are starting with zero candidate and going from the bottom up. I mean, if they're going to interview Josh McCown, who's next?
How you walk into that job and know everything you need to do.
You've got to be a professional coach at the NFL level, and a coordinator helps. I mean, you got to know what's going on. You got to know how to put together who's going to be on Josh McCown's staff? Who's going to be defensive coordinator for Josh McCown?
I don't know, Steve.
It's crazy. You know, and you know what? And I've got this theory, and we talk about this all the time, and I'm just talking out of a straight media opinion because that's what I do now. Nobody wants that job. They pick up the phone and say, hey, Brian Flores, what about click? Hey, Brian Daboll, we're thinking about interviewing you. Click. Leslie Frazier, this is.
We know you were a finalist for this job last year.
Right. This is Matt Easterby from the Houston Tech. Jack Easterby from the Houston Tech. Click. They hired a guy who'd never been a coordinator last year in David Culley. A little bit of a surprise. People are like, wow, what was, you know, because nobody else wanted the job. Because you think he's the first guy on their list? No, he's the first guy that said yes. And that's the way this works at the NFL level. You get a guy on there who you've used for a head coaching job, and the ownership's like, I don't know. You know, so they quietly say, okay, then don't offer me the job, and you just go a different direction. Or the head coaching candidate says, yeah, no, if you're not going to do this, if you're not going to do A, B, C, D, E, and F, because there's a list.
Uh-huh.
You got to have some stuff in place if you're a head coach and say, I want the A, B, C, D, and E in place. And they say, well, we can't give you all that. And they say, you know, that's fine, guys, but I need that to take this job. If you're not going to do that, then let's go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate the time. That's how it goes. Finally, you get a guy like David Culley who says, I need A and B. And they say, yeah, we can do that because that was the other guy's E and F. You're in if you want it. 5 years, $5 million.
Yep.
A year. 5 years, $5 million a year. And David Culley says, yeah, sure. He comes in. They give him A and B, and he makes chicken salad out of chicken poop. And they fire him anyway. Oh, yeah, there's going to be a long list of guys in line for that job, right? Yeah, apparently, McCown is the guy.
Yeah.
That is a dumpster fire in Houston.
Yeah.
That is hot garbage. Hot garbage.
Yeah, well, They've made their own bed, and now they have to lie in it. And, you know, Josh McCown would come in as the greenest of green NFL head coaches.
He's the greenest of green wide receiver coaches.
Quarterback coaches.
Pick a spot. He's the greenest of green quality control coach. Plug him in at the top of the pyramid. Unbelievable.
He previously coached at the high school level. He was a quarterback's coach for his son's team in Charlotte, North Carolina. McCown impressed the Texans last season with his knowledge of the game and leadership skills, according to league sources not authorized to speak publicly. There's your resume, Steve.
That's great.
Imagine one of us in this field with that resume.
He's a way better candidate than he's a way better candidate than Brian Daboll or Leslie Frazier. A way better candidate than Byron Leftwich or Eric Bieniemy or Matt Eberflus. Or, I mean, you go down the list.
Right.
Every coordinator in the league is a better candidate than that.
Right.
Every coordinator in the league.
Right. There are other developments on the hiring front that concern. Yes?
We're in the divisional round of playoffs. I'm kind of happy right now because we ain't in that mess anymore.
Well, we were.
I know.
We were in that hiring cycle like a hamster on a wheel for a very long time. And, yes. But not Steve, I'm telling you right now. Having covered those off-season events,
I get it.
Every time that would happen, me and the other colleagues at BuffaloBills.com, we would all look at each other and say, going to be a pretty busy off-season.
I get it.
Because stuff was just going to keep on coming and coming. The roster was going to turn over. The coaching staff would turn over. Who are they interviewing? Who are they thinking about for this job, that job, and the other thing? So while it gave you a steady flow of news, it's not the kind of news you'd necessarily want because it means you're changing things again.
Right.
And you're going to start from square one again. Speaking of starting from square one, the New York Giants are doing that, and they are doing it with now former Bills assistant GM Joe Shane. The reports, multiple reports, have indicated that the Giants have found their man. It is Bills assistant GM, or it is now official, that the Giants have announced it. Okay,
yeah,
very good.
They've announced it.
Bills assistant GM Joe Shane has been hired as their next general manager, replacing the retired Dave Gettleman. And already there is a short list of head coaching candidates that it is believed Shane is interested in interviewing for that job. They are Brian Daboll, Brian Flores, Dan Quinn, and Leslie Frazier. No surprise that both coordinators from here in Buffalo are on that short list.
Let me think about it. They had Joe Judge, who was an unproven head coach when the Giants hired him. Didn't work out, as we know. But here's the difference. You get a team like the Giants. Joe Judge, special teams coordinator for the New England Patriots. Good leader and all that, but it didn't work out for him. Had his own issues. Wasn't the guy. But he got 3 years. Uh-huh. He got a chance to get it off the ground and to instill what he wanted that team to look like. That's why this time around, the Giants get to talk to guys like Brian Daboll, Brian Flores, Leslie Frazier, Dan Quinn, Matt Eberflus, and the like. They get the top candidates for that job, guys who have had some experience as a head coach and guys who are longtime very successful coordinators on both sides or either side of the ball. That's why the Giants get to talk to those guys, and the Texans get to talk to Josh McCown, a recently retired player. I got to tell you, listen, in this building, in the Buffalo Bills organization, and every team is different. There's 300 people in this building when it's not pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
That's 300 people in the building. It goes from the GM down through and the head coach. You're talking. Those guys are the guys that set the tone for everybody. Forget the 53 guys on the roster and the 12 guys on the practice squad. Those are the guys. You've got a lot of moving parts that you've got to have some experience in handling. A staff, a scouting staff, a relationship with a general manager,
pro personnel department.
Pro personnel director, college personnel director, college scout, pro scout. You got media relations people.
Yeah,
you got a medical staff you got to deal with. You got a training staff, a exercise science staff you got to deal with. All of that, and to be dropped into that as a, just like a guy that just retired, as the top guy instead of just one of the guys that all those people serve as a player, particularly a quarterback. My gosh,
it's a big lift.
It's a huge lift.
It's a big lift.
You got to have some experience and some wherewithal to get through that. And these guys, I mean, you're talking about these four lane, you know, Brian Flores, Leslie Frazier, Brian Daboll, Eberflus, Dan Quinn, all these guys. You got to be a professional coach.
Yeah.
That's why you get a lot of guys now at the professional level. It didn't used to be this way. More and more and more and more guys at the professional level have been a coach all their lives. Not a player, but a coach. Certainly they played in college or high school or whatever to get them into the sport.
Yeah.
But most of these guys are a longer coach, have a longer career as a coach than they do as a player.
Mm-hmm.
They're professional coaches.
Coach McDermott is an example of that.
Exactly.
I mean, right after his college career is over.
They started 22.
Right into coaching.
22 years old, they're watching film in a room.
Yeah.
Compiling scouting notes. That's what they do.
Charting plays, all that stuff.
All these guys, young, energetic coaches, they're full-time coaches. They're not guys who say, well, I'm done playing, what do I want to do now?
So congratulations to Joe Shane, now a general manager in the league, certainly well-deserved, certainly earned. He was, you know, in the running for a couple of jobs over each of the last couple of off seasons, and now he has been hired by the New York Giants. It is a loss for Buffalo's front office, but they are well-stocked with quality people. They still have Brian Gain in that front office, Malik Boyd in that front office, right. Terrence Gray in that front office to help Brandon Bean. So it's not as though the cupboard is bare. When Brandon Bean came here, he really assembled an all-star collection of personnel people.
They brought some guys.
So the cupboard is not bare here by any stretch. And, you know, in the end, Joe Shane deserved this opportunity. I don't think there's any question about it. The resume he has put together, the rosters he has helped assemble, especially here in Buffalo over these last 5 years, nothing short of impressive. So congrats to him. We wish him luck in New York with the Giants or New Jersey, except when they play the Bills. That's about it.
Right.
So,
but
he's got some cleaning up to do.
Good for them. And it's great, too, because I'm always happy to stand up and clap for guys who finally get their shot, as maybe, you know, Leslie Frazier, Brian Daboll, all these other guys, you know, that you've seen. Well, like a guy like Sean McDermott. Most of here in Buffalo, we didn't know him from Adam until his name got associated with the interview process. It's like, okay. But you know what? There are a lot of people in his past and they're saying, you know what? About time. Good job. All right, here we go. Good for him. And I want to do that for all these guys. But I don't have any skin in this game with guys, but you want to see guys who've earned it get their shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is what got you so upset in the first place about the reports of Josh McCown. So let's put that part of the conversation to bed and we move forward. Steve, I've noticed this. Driving to my house, you know, in the evening when the sun's gone down, in the neighborhoods that I pass through on the way home from wherever I'm coming from, neighboring towns and then my town, more and more I am seeing red and blue lights on houses for their porch lights or, you know, the lights on either side of the garage door outside of people's homes. They're red and blue for Bills colors.
Really?
I don't know if this has happened at all in your neighborhood or if you've noticed it at all.
I have not noticed it.
Porch lights, garage lights, red and blue. It's kind of cool. It's like, hey, you know, we're leaving the light on for the Bills kind of thing.
Yeah, I get it.
I think it's pretty neat. And there's a part of me that kind of hopes that it kind of takes off and becomes almost infectious because I just think it's kind of like a cool Buffalo, Western New York spirit kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, not that the Bills fans need to impress anybody with how loyal they are with their following, but I was just thinking to myself, dang, they always think of something. Here's another thing that they're doing. It's just kind of cool.
I had, you know, you always, I'm totally with you, and you're right. I mean, it has been a week among all the weeks this week after that New England game. Fans are just, everybody is just so upbeat and so hopeful for what the future holds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, and we talked about it yesterday, how we don't have the same angst about this Kansas City game as we do the New England game last weekend. And I don't know why that is, except for this. And this is what bothers me. And I hope, I don't want to put anybody in a bad spot mentally. So you can,
yeah, no bad juju.
Yeah, I don't want to have any bad vibes. I think for fans, as, and let me just close my eyes and put my hand and say, as just perfect as that game was last Saturday night, just an absolute picture perfect in every way, shape, and form. The alumni there, the way they absolutely beat down the Patriots after all those years with the Patriots, they were absolutely just one thing after another, didn't even punt. I mean, it was just one of those games. The perfection of that game. I'm getting the sense that for Bills fans, they're just ready to say, you know what, no matter how this ends, that was awesome. That was the Super Bowl. I mean, it's going to be a highlight of the season. And I don't, you know, I just, you get the feeling like the fans have like given the big exhale, like, man, the Wicked Witch is dead.
Right, but the work is just beginning.
Well, that's for the team, but for the fans, I think our mentality is like, the Super Bowl happened last Saturday night at 8:15. You know, that kind of mentality.
I think there's some fans that might have thought that way, but
it feels I think that way.
Yeah, I think fans that are hoping for much, much more.
I want to listen. I am all about it. I'm one of those guys. I'm one of the old guys.
To give an indication as to how much the Bills have taken over the conversation of the entire city and Western New York area, you got Senator Chuck Schumer at a General Motors press conference today with a Bills hat on. And he actually said at the end of his press conference, Bills by a billion. That's where we are.
Bills by a billion, baby.
That's where we are now. And I'm going to tell you this. Almost every conversation that I've had, my wife's mentioned this to me. She's on a conference call yesterday for work. End of the conference call, you know, one of the Zoom calls.
Right. Like
end of the conference call.
50 people on the screen.
Everybody's saying, nobody says goodbye. They're all saying, go Bills, go Bills, go Bills. That's the new farewell now.
Yeah.
In the city. Everybody, go Bills.
I mean, people watch MSG. I mean, I got my Bills. I got a Bills Mafia T-shirt on underneath my quarter zip today. I got just, I don't know if I'm going to, I may not wear anything else for a month and a half now. Just, you know, it used to be I'd go home and I'd change out of clothes.
Nothing stuff. Like Bills absolutely. Gear to church.
Yeah, oh, I've done that. Are you kidding me? On game day? Forget it.
I'm
not alone either.
But
and
it's really, that's like the new send-off here in Western New York. Go Bills.
Go Bills. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it struck me that it was such a perfect evening last Saturday night that maybe, you know, the fan base is kind of complacent now about, and me too, me and you too, because we don't have the same angst about this game. This is a much more difficult game.
I'm nervous excited. As we said yesterday, I am nervous excited, not terrified excited. There's a difference, a big difference. Like, when you're nervous excited, you're like, oh, I can't wait to see what happens. Like, you're thinking optimistically. When you're terrified excited, you're like, I hope this goes well.
Right.
I hope this goes okay.
I'm there with you. This
you're
game,
already halfway down your fingernails
this game
before
in Kansas
kickoff.
City. This game in Kansas City, I can't wait to watch it. The game last Saturday night against New England is like, oh my gosh, we've got to win this game.
Yeah.
We've got to win it. But this week I'm like, yeah, let's see what happens. You know, I want the Bills to win. I'm all about it, but it's just a completely different mindset. And I think it has to do with the sheer perfection of that game last week in so many levels, not even on the field.
It's left everybody on a high.
Yeah.
Through the middle
I mean,
of
you're
this
almost
week,
delirious.
Easily.
And it's so I just, it struck me, I don't know that I've ever experienced anything like this. Certainly, I've never won a Super Bowl, so I don't know what it's like after that.
Yeah.
But you just get that feeling of, wow, that was it. And this team is, you know, the Bills are like, they're up in the ante every week.
I don't know how you up the ante from that.
I know.
Especially against a better and higher quality opponent. So I hope the expectations remain realistic for the Bills going into this game. Because I can tell you right now, if they duplicate last week, you're going to be able to knock me over with a feather. Because
this caliber of team
is not going to allow that.
This ain't no rookie quarterback.
To happen. Even defensively, they're not going to allow that to happen.
Right.
You can look at the league rankings at the end of the regular season all you want. Man for man, this Chiefs defense down the stretch has been playing superior defense to that of New England. New England's got all the high top 10 rankings right behind the Bills in many categories, but the way they played the last month of the season was terrible. And we saw it on Saturday. That is not the case for the Chiefs, who are playing some of their best defensive football.
And during the broadcast, I know the Ian Eagle and
Charles Davis
had, you know, Zoom meetings and production meetings with Bill Belichick and stuff, and Ian had said late in the broadcast that Belichick had said, listen, we're going to have to play our best game to beat this team.
And he was worried.
He knew.
Going in about his team's lack of consistency down the stretch. He says, you don't hear from him ever.
He said, I mean, he watches film. And he knows better than you and I. And he's telling those guys, and I've been in production meetings with him. He's pretty forthright, you know, about what's important in this game, what's not important, and what I mean. He knows as much as you can predict what's going to happen. He has the ability to do that because he knows the numbers on both sides of the game of the ball, and he told them that they would have to play their best game in order to beat the Bills. So they knew what they were walking into. I guarantee you, Andy Reid's not thinking that.
Right.
Andy Reid says, "Listen, if we play our game, nobody can beat us. Let's go." You know. So this is going to be a much different football game for the Buffalo Bills than the one in New England. No matter what you and I and all of us fans out here think about this game, this is going to be different. This is going to be a different battle than it was on Saturday night.
Today is Friday, which means the OBL Friday fan mailbag is open for you to submit any and all questions on the Bills or the NFL at large. Steve and I will do our best to answer those. So send them on in. And we also have Tailgate Friday. So if you have any tailgating plans on the home front, if you're not making the trip out to KC, let us know what those are. Hopefully they are indoors because it's still going to be pretty darn cold here this weekend. We came in today. It's 9 degrees. So send us any and all plans you may have, whether you're in your man cave or you're grilling out on your backyard, 0 degree temperatures be damned. We want to know what your plans are for this one, especially since it's the last game of the weekend. So let us know what your thoughts are on that. 803-0550, the number to get on board, 1-888-550-2550. So be sure to do that. Steve, before we get to the phones, I did want to pass this along to you. Longtime writer for the Dallas Morning News, now writing for Fan Nation, Rick Goslin, also a Hall of Fame selector, has his annual special teams rankings. He kind of was the originator of a special teams ranking system that he came up with himself to assess who the best all-around special teams units are. And he did it again this year, as he does every year, and he's done it for probably about 30 years now. And the final NFL special teams ranking, Steve, have the Buffalo Bills 8th in the league, a very respectable showing. It's the second time in the last 2 years that the Bills have earned a top 10 ranking under special teams coordinator Heath Farwell. And as much as we've talked about the offense and defense this year, Steve, special teams has had a hand in this thing. In a big way. I know they've had, a miscue here, a miscue there through the course of the season, blocked punt, some tipped extra points last week, some ball security issues at times, but they've also forced some turnovers. So Rand Neal has had a monster season as a gunner and a coverage player, and they've cycled through three different returners and really, for the most part, have not missed a beat. And they've set the team up with a top five average drive start on the season. So what can you say about what you've seen from Heath Farwell's crew this year?
And I think Heath Farwell is the quintessential guy who McDermott wants on his staff. Farwell came in as a first-time coordinator and self-admittedly needed to grow into the role. And then his second year, now his third year, has made – has got it. I mean, he knows what he's doing now.
Yeah.
And his ability – and McDermott, like we talk about – you've talked about it at length. Their ability to get players who, to play better over the course of a year and develop players, it's the same thing on the staff. The coaches play better. The coaches coach better. The coaches get better at what they're doing. They get better at communicating. They get better at translating the concepts of the plays to their players and getting them on the field to play it better. Picking the right players. Motivating the right players. Getting the right combination. Put them in the right spots. Heath Farwell has been one of the quintessential stories of what it has been to be a part of the Buffalo Bills under Sean McDermott. Wherever you start from is not where you're at now because you're way ahead of it. Yeah. And he has gotten better and better, and so have his players. Now, you remember Tywan Jones left for a year and came back.
Yep.
Saran Neal has been here. Medikevich is a new player as of last year. He's in his second year. So they've got some guys who have washed through. And their core group of special teamers, I thought they were fantastic against New England last week. Fantastic. Forget about the block kick. Those that's more offensive line and some of the other stuff. But the coverage guys on kickoff and punt have been phenomenal this year. I thought they've been great.
For those and last year in the AFC title game, they forced a fumble. Well, Mecole Hardman kind of muffed the kick, but they jumped right on it, scored an early touchdown. So I'd sign up for that again. For those of you wondering, the number one team in the 2021 NFL Special Teams rankings by Rick Goslin were the Baltimore Ravens. And they have been in the top five each of the last couple of years. And you might say, well, that's no surprise. John Harbaugh was a former special teams coach with Philadelphia before becoming the head coach in Baltimore. But your top five were these teams. Baltimore, Indy, Seattle, Kansas City, New Orleans, Dallas, Detroit, and then Buffalo. So those were the top eight. But Kansas City, in the top five, we already know they have an all-world kicker in Harrison Butker who can kick it from the parking lot. His leg is every big as Tyler Bass's is.
And so do the Ravens, the number one team. They've got Tucker, right? So he's got all-world. And one of the things, I'll say this, though. One of the reasons you have really good special teams, one of the main facets of it, There's four core special teams: punt return, kickoff return.
Yep.
Those are the ones you're going to get all the time. And field goal defense, and that's your kicker. The kickoff return team is always the one that goes to the best kickoff return team in the league is usually and almost virtually unchanging in the fact that it's the team that has the most reps. The kickoff return team is the one whose defense is the worst, because they get a lot of reps at returning kicks.
Yeah. Brian Moorman went to the Pro Bowl and he had 88 punts that year and still had an average of 40 net.
Right. That's a lot of punts, you know. And so you get a team, and so when you have a good kickoff return team because they get a lot of reps, it raises your team through the rankings because nobody else faces that many returns, doesn't get that good at it, and it's not part of their persona, so, you know, so to speak.
Chiefs as a team averaged 12 yards a punt return this season. That's a fat average.
It's a fat average. Anything around 10 is good. 12's big.
That's elite.
That is very elite.
So that's really good. We have to take a break here, but we are going to get to the phones as soon as we come back. So those of you holding at 803-0550, we will get to you in the next segment here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. The Friday fan mailbag is open here on One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Submit your questions on Twitter if you wish at One Bills Live or give us a call, 803-0550. We go to the phones now and we lead off with Jim in Florida. Jim, what do you have for us here on One Bills Live?
Well, I think we've omitted how well the offensive line's been doing with Ellen not being sacked hardly at all anymore, and our running back, Singletary, running much better. I think the offensive line deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about them in recent weeks. They've certainly stepped up to the plate in terms of winning the line of scrimmage battle, Jim. I don't think there's any question about that, and thanks for the call. Mid-season, when this team was winning and losing and winning and losing, you heard Coach McDermott put the demand out there. We have to play more physical at the line of scrimmage. And he said on both sides of the ball, and it took a little while, but I think both sides of the ball delivered a definitive answer. And we are seeing the difference because of that. And the run game production is up. Production in the red zone is up because they're winning their battles at the line of scrimmage more often than not in every single game down the stretch here. And we saw it again against New England last Saturday.
Yeah. That's we've equated their run of success here at the end of the season with the settled offensive line that they came in. And yeah. I've called it everything from, you know, settling in like I just did to lightning in a bottle, which is something they've been searching for. We talked about it ad nauseum throughout the regular season. Every week it was a different combination. And if they started the game with the same combination 2 weeks in a row, halfway through the game somebody got injured.
Well, even in week 16, Ike Butker with the Achilles injury goes down in the second quarter.
Right.
And they got to move four guys to fill one spot.
That's right. And then they go in the next week. And then the next week they put up 27. They come back in the second half and put up 27 point or 24 points on the Bucks to get it to overtime. So they kind of caught it right then, even though it wasn't enough to win that game, which it should have been because of an egregious non-call. I don't get into it.
Yeah.
So, you know, they played better. And then they started, and then they started winning games. And right down the stretch, they've gone undefeated since then. Yeah, we've been talking at length about the offensive line and how well they played and what a big difference it's made. We just hope it continues.
Yeah. We next go to Julian in Buffalo. What do you got for us, Julian?
How you fellas doing today, man? Feeling great.
Doing good.
Us too.
Great. What I really want to talk about, but before I get into that, first I want to say, do we not have the coolest legends in the whole entire NFL? With the way Steve Tasker comes out, I guess the Jets getting the whole stadium popped up, and then with Thurman doing the gritty, and then everybody, I just say we're the coolest in the league right now.
Yeah.
If ever. And then my main question, there's a play that the Cowboys did in the game, pretty sure you guys watched it, where where a guy goes out, does like a curl, catches it, and then laterals it, and then he goes off to the side. And I know the Cowboys failed it one time, and then they were successful the second time to stop the clock. I personally feel like that will be a perfect play for Diggs and McKenzie. Have Diggs do a curl route on one side and have McKenzie do a drag or slant full speed. Hopefully we catch him off guard to get a big run or whatever the case may be. Stephon Diggs was at the game, so shoot, hopefully he gets in Dable's ear and let him know what's up. But other than that, thank you guys. You guys are the best, man. Love watching and listening to you guys, and go Bills.
Appreciate that, Julian. Right, have a good weekend. Thanks for the call. That's usually a play that you see surface at the end of a game for a team that's down on the scoreboard and needs to get a big gainer.
And there's a reason for it. It's really hard to do without any mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, ball security is an issue.
The timing of the guy coming around at the right time, the guy who catches it being not in the grasp of somebody when the guy does come by. If you come by too late, they're going to be tackling the guy, and he's not going to be able to lateral it. Or if he's about to be tackled or in the grasp of somebody, tries to lateral it, and it scoots over the guy's head, and then you're, you know. So there's so many things that can go wrong with it. Certainly, it's a pretty good play when it works. But even when it does, you know, it can go for a touchdown, but, you know, they're trying to get the clock stopped and all that in Dallas, and I get it. It's a cool play, and I'm sure the Bills have something of that nature in their playbook, although, you know, not that exact play or something like it or whatever. Halfback pass, wide receiver pass, we've seen that a ton too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a trick play. It's called the hook and lateral, and sometimes it works.
And it did last week for Dallas, just not enough to win them the football game because of the decisions that would follow after that, but that's another story for another day.
Well, I mean, yeah.
We go – Yeah. We go to Dave in Florida next. Dave, what do you got for us? You're on One Bills Live.
How you doing today, fellas?
Good.
All right, good. Listen, just a couple of things, nothing big. I've been wearing my Buffalo Bills. I got a couple of 3-4 shirts, jerseys. In these last 2-3 weeks, I can't go anywhere without anybody blowing their horn or tapping me on the shoulder. World War II veterans tapped me on the back about the Bills. And the other question I got is, Steve, you would know, who is the commentator going to be Sunday on CBS? And don't say Collinsworth.
No, it's not. It's going to be Jim Nantz and Tony Romo, Dave. So that's who you're getting. Oh. The same guys that called the AFC title game last year are calling this one. We actually had Jim Nantz on the show earlier this week. But, Dave, glad you're getting the Go Bills down there in sunny FLA.
Oh, yeah. You can. You don't know how big it is down
here. Yeah, you got a lot of transplants down there, so I get it.
Yeah, well, we're all here. We're waiting, and, you know, we're waiting on our team. Every year we're winning, win or lose.
I got it. Thanks, Dave.
We're
going
to win. All right. We're going to win. Tell Steve relax.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Dave. Appreciate it. You got to calm down, Steve. You were fired up at the start of the show. People are worried about you. Yeah, I mean, I remember several years ago when my kids were younger, we went to Disney World, and I was walking around with a Bills hat, because if I don't have my head covered in Florida with that sun, I don't care how much sunscreen I got on my head, I'm going to look like a tomato the next day.
Right.
And I just had the hat on. I can't tell you how many people just walking by. Go Bills.
Oh, yeah.
Go Bills.
You know? Well, the locals don't go to Disney World.
Well, right.
It's people from out of town. But, yeah, I remember back in the day, we went down to Tampa, the old Sombrero Stadium, and it was, I can't remember what year it was, but they had, Tampa Bay was not very good and had not ever been very good, and they had the old Sombrero and the two sections in the middle between the 40s, there were two sections, right in between those and about halfway up was all creamsicle, right? It was all the season ticket holders.
Yeah, Tampa jerseys.
I mean, it was almost a demarcation, right? It was like a square, like it was planned, both sides. Everything else around the edges and around the thing was like 3/4 or full, 80% full, was all blue and red. All blue and red.
Yeah.
And because the Tampa Bay had been bad for a long time. They didn't have a good fan base. The stadium wasn't that good. And the Bills didn't play there very often. So the transplants and the
people flew down.
The mafia show up, and it was unbelievable. It was the first time I'd ever seen that as a player. Now you see it once in a while with other teams, you know. So, but man, oh man, I was like, look at this.
We got a home game down
look
here.
Look at this. We were like, oh, look. It was like,
awesome. Golly gee,
you know. Like, we'd never seen it before, you know. So, yeah, that was before, you know, the Chargers moved to L.A. and it happened every week to them.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. We go to Jeff in Buffalo next. What do you have for us, Jeff?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
I am calling to tell Steve that feeling he has, the excitement about the game and everything coming up, it feels incredibly similar to the feeling as a fan back in the day. I don't know if you had this as a player back in the day, but as a fan, after the 51-3 beatdown of the Raiders going toward the first Super Bowl there, we had that same feeling here in Buffalo, that excitement, the feeling that we can crush anybody. And we know how that worked out in the next game. So that's the fear that I have is running through the excitement.
I get it.
That's the one thing there that I wanted to say. The other thing that I wanted to say was that I thought I saw something in the first game that we played against Kansas City where, Mahomes was running outside. He goes out to the right, runs out of the pocket, and he has a clear field in front of him except for one guy. And that one guy was Boogie Basham. And Boogie did his rush to him. He rushes at him, but instead of going right at Mahomes, he pulls up and stops about 4 or 5 feet from Mahomes. And Mahomes, deeks guys all the time in that situation, but he couldn't do it because Boogie stopped and then comes after him and blew up the play. And I'm wondering if that, I don't know, if it's a formula. I don't know if you can have a formula with this guy, with Mahomes. But he definitely kept him from doing what he wanted to do by pulling up and waiting to see where Mahomes was going to go.
Yeah, that's called good coaching. And thanks for the call, Jeff. That's the player development I'm talking about. That's week 5 for a rookie. And he's executing his assignment, which is, I'm a defensive lineman. I've got a quarterback that is shiftier than I am. I can't run headlong at him because he'll give me a little fake and I'll be grabbing for air. So let me slow down, break down, close down the space, and force him to either A, throw the ball while I close the space even more, but at the very least, I'm going to keep him from running for 10 or 15 yards here.
Yeah, yes, it's a great way to do it. That's when a guy can make you miss, is when you take your shot at him. And I've said that a lot. I've watched special teams guys coming down the field a lot, and they all want to make that great hit and whack the guy when he catches the ball. And to me, it's always been a bad idea. It's hard to time it up. And it makes the same thing when you're chasing a quarterback. When you break down, he has to – even though you're not chasing him, you're right there, he has to deal with you. He has to decide, do I have time to throw it without, you know, or should I get away from me? Is he going to, you know, you've got decisions you got to make. And while you're sitting there making these decisions, the world's going by.
Well, not only that, he forces you to pull your eyes down. So now you're not even looking down
the
field.
You're not, the play's over for everybody except you. And that's the thing about it. When you force the guy to make decisions, he's sitting there trying to make choices. He's not making plays. And when he's got to deal, like Mahomes in this situation you're talking about, he had to deal with Boogie Basham before he could throw it. He had to decide, there's nobody to throw it to, otherwise he would have thrown it already. So his only choice was to get Boogie to rush past him so he could get some space. And when he refuses to do that, and all this thing, and I'm sitting here talking like this, that's how long it seems to take it's over.
Yeah.
Everything's done. You're sitting here talking like this and thinking the things I'm talking about. It's over. Because there's other four other D linemen they're closing in. There's offensive line. They're all
backside pursuit.
You don't have time to think like that. It's over. And like you said, he's throwing it away.
Play gets blown up. Yep.
Play gets thrown up. He throws it away. You get tackled, whatever. So you got to make him deal with you, because if you rush past him, he sidesteps. You rush past him, he doesn't. You're done. He can think about other things. But you got to make him think about you, and then you got him.
Yeah, and if you're a bigger guy, it's better to break down and wrap him up for a one-yard gain than it is to go diving headlong at him, miss him, and he runs for 15.
Grab his jersey. If you grab his jersey and start pulling on it, he's going to try and start just unloading it, or he's going to start to protect it. Other than that, he's got nothing else he can do except think about who's going to get him down.
Break time for us here. When we come back, more of your phone calls and a little bit about your plans here on Tailgate Friday. We'll get to that when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Time for a little Tailgate Friday, presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health plan of the Buffalo Bills, and checking the Tailgate Friday submissions for your tailgating plans this weekend. Sean says, flying back home to Arkansas tomorrow, dropping the kids off at my family's on Sunday morning, make the 3-hour drive up to KC, debating on pre-cooking a brisket or ribs and finishing them at the stadium, or keep it simple with burgers, dogs, and Labatt's. That's
not Labatt's.
That's an effort there.
It's Labatt.
Okay.
We have an ongoing
This
debate.
Is a pet peeve, clearly.
Well, you know, when you go down and drink a few of those, they're Labatt's. The company is Labatt.
Right.
Try telling that to a Notre Dame graduate. That's all I can say.
Okay. There's only so much.
Steve Berline, my former partner.
There's only so much you can do.
We have an ongoing debate. He won't give in, even though the label says Labatt.
Yeah.
This isn't a beer commercial. I'm just saying. Get it right. Come on. Be a professional.
We're getting a lot of responses from Bills fans that live out in the middle of the country. So Matt from Ozark, Missouri. Wild game for the wild card game. Venison stew, he went with. Pizza from scratch and wings sauced with Bills Mafia JA17 and Diggs 14 hot sauces. This week the same, but based on current events, we are going with barbecue glazed meatloaf. I wonder if that's a tribute to meatloaf.
Nice. I like where your head's at, Matt, from Ozark.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I like that.
And he's, I'm assuming he's making the trip up. How far is Ozark, Missouri, you think, from Kansas
Not
City?
Not that far.
Not far, right?
No. No. Kansas City is at the midpoint north-south of Missouri on the western border.
Right.
And
Ozark is?
Ozark, probably southeast. It's maybe southwest.
Okay.
All right, I'll just look it up real
quick. You work on that. Mark, meanwhile, Mark's taking a whole different take on the tailgate. He's bringing it inside. He says, I'm going to be padlocked in the basement. Menu, 4 chicken wings, 2 Tylenol, and a 64-ounce root beer.
There you go.
Half a gallon of root beer. I hope there's a bathroom in the basement if you're padlocking yourself down there, because you're not making it through the game after drinking a half gallon of root beer. You're just not. I don't care how big your bladder is. It ain't happening.
Ozark is like just south of Springville, Missouri, which is only you could throw a rock and hit Kansas City.
Oh, all right, great.
Maybe not throw a rock, but
Faith says homemade meatballs for Bombers, spinach artichoke dip, and rye bread with dill dip will be watching from Lockport. Not bad. John says not making the trip, but we always have my wife's 84-year-old grandpa come over for some beers. Love it. Then we always have a nice dinner. My wife's making lasagna roll-ups. Don't ask. I have no idea what it is.
Yep.
It was something she found on Pinterest.
Hey, innovative. I like it. Go for it.
Lasagna roll-ups. I've got to get a picture of those.
Right.
Those sound delicious. Can you imagine being able to pick up lasagna with your hand? Well, maybe not with your hand. You probably still have to slice them. So it sounds like, it sounds just, you know, growing up in an Italian household, a lasagna roll-up is probably somewhere between lasagna and manicotti.
What's a goat's name?
Manicotti.
Manawati?
Manicotti is how the American pronunciation is. You say manicotti. So it's like, so manicotti is like rolled up, cheese-filled pasta.
Right, I know that. I know what manicotti is.
It looks like an enchilada.
What was it you said?
Manicotti.
Right.
I'm saying it like my grandmother said.
You're right.
But I would think a lasagna roll-up is somewhere between it's everything that's in lasagna, but it's rolled up like manicotti. That would be my guess. But I got to see a picture of that.
Hey, I was wrong about Ozark, Missouri, too. It's a long way.
Oh, it is.
It's a couple hundred miles. You cannot throw a rock and hit Kansas.
That's why you're in broadcasting and you're not a geographer.
Yes, no.
Nick, finally, to wrap up Tailgate Friday, says, having family and friends over, starting the charcoal grill, cooking chicken, marinated with civetas, nice, herb and oil grilled wedge potatoes. Ooh.
Yeah, I'm all about
ooh,
that.
Ooh, that sounds good.
That's a nice touch.
Grilled corn on the cob, which is the best way to do it.
Yeah, do they get that? I mean, it's
hard to get corn on the cob these days, isn't it?
January.
That's tough. Good on you for finding some of that,
good
Nick,
for you.
And drinking a ton of IPA beer.
A hot house or something you're throwing that stuff in?
Cheers and go Bills. Good job on Tailgate Friday this week, everybody. Some really good submissions there. And brought to you by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health plan of the Buffalo Bills. Going to squeeze one call in here, Steve, because we've got a lot of people holding at 803-0550. Ken, up in the Northern Tier, up in Watertown. What you got for us, Ken?
Good afternoon, guys. Steve, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I followed your career all my life, and I thought you were one of the best special teams players in the NFL at one time.
Thank you.
And, you know, I listened to Get Up and SportsCenter, and a lot of these people are saying on there that the Chiefs have become better than they were in the first game that the Bills played them earlier this year. Well, you know, what I got to say about that is when it took the Chiefs 5 minutes in the second period before they got any points. And if that's the case with the Bills, it's going to be 24-0 before the Chiefs, even if they play like that. What do you think?
Well, I do think while the Bills are certainly riding high, Ken, in terms of their offensive efficiency, I mean, it was as good as it's ever been all season, maybe in the last 2 years, last week. So I respect your confidence in the Bills, but they're playing a much better defense in the Chiefs, which has gotten better as the year has worn on. Since week 5, the Chiefs are +10 in turnover margin. And I think that's the best in football over that stretch, the last 12 games of the regular season. They're taking the football away. Their defensive line is playing the best it has all year. And so while I believe the Bills will be able to put up points, it will be a far more difficult task against this defense as opposed to last week's.
I'll just say it again. My thought about this game is this. I think these two offenses are juggernauts. I think they are really hard to stop. They got weapons. They got speed. They got quarterbacks that are elite, both during the play, from the pocket, and outside the pocket. They can both run. They can both make plays that aren't there to be made. They can make chicken salad out of chicken poop, all of that stuff. Both these quarterbacks and its offenses are full of it, full of weapons and points scored and all that. The defenses are going to come down to the defense in this game is going to come down to this. Certainly, you don't want to give up an explosive play. You want to keep everything in front of you and make them go the long way. And then, on less than a handful of plays, make something happen. Tipped interception, forced fumble, tackle for loss, guess right, gamble, get an interception, or gamble and tip a ball away on a fourth down conversion or a third down and long conversion or whatever, tackle for loss unexpectedly. On less than a handful of plays, you're going to be able to have to do that. And that's going to be the difference in the game. Your defense is going to make a play or two or three during the game that's going to make a difference. It's going to give your offense either one more possession or get their offense off the field quicker than they thought they would be off the field.
Yeah.
That's what this game is going to be about defensively, in my opinion. I think these two offenses are going to be too difficult to shut down, and I think it's going to be about making one or two plays that give your team the ball back one way or another. Either get them off the field quick or get you back and get your team back on the field or vice versa. That's the defensive role in this game, in my opinion.
Break time for us, but we'll be diving into those X's and O's a little bit more when we come back as we are joined by senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, set to join us next. Talk Bills Chiefs with us here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, hour number two here on a Friday, and you know what that means. It means senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, joins us to talk some X's and O's for this divisional playoff tilt between the Bills and the Chiefs. And Greg, I want to start here. As you know, we often put you in the prediction game based on past tendencies and stuff.
Oh, come on now, Chris. I don't predict.
Here's the thing.
All I will say is anything short of seven possessions and seven touchdowns will probably be a monumental failure, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Why should we expect anything else?
I wanted to begin here, though, Greg. Back in week five, the Bills offense comes out in a lot of closed formation looks. They basically go completely away from their tendencies. I think I counted like upwards of 20 plays in 12 or 21 personnel. A lot of early designed runs for Josh. And it really got them in a good rhythm early. Knowing that Daboll is not one to do the same thing twice, I'm very, very curious as to what they turn to this time around.
You know, Chris, you know what's really sad is I guess being with you guys, I just had a funny feeling you were going to mention this. So I went back and looked at my notes and saw that the Bills played 19 snaps of 21 personnel and 6 snaps of 12 personnel. So I guess we're getting a little too close here, Chris, that I knew you were going to ask me that. So that's a really bad thing. There's no way they will do the same thing. No way. Now, that doesn't mean you'll never see 21 personnel, clearly, because they don't really have a second tight end right now, correct?
They use Reggie Gilliam, who's technically
kind of a
fullback.
Yeah, he's sort of a hybrid the way they line him up, a fullback and tight end. But again, like I said, that doesn't mean they won't line up at all in 21 personnel, but I think you will not see the emphasis on that a personnel package the way you did in week five, no question.
Yeah, and the way this game breaks down is these are very different teams now, 3 months after they played the first time. What are the most stark differences in your mind?
Well, I do not believe, and I'm trying to remember week five. I went back and looked at my notes, but I can't remember every detail. Was Melvin Ingram on the Chiefs at that point?
No, he had not been traded yet. No.
No, so that's when the Chiefs were still trying to use Chris Jones as a defensive end, and that didn't work out really well. He's really a phenomenal defensive tackle, and I think that, you know, now with Ingram, who's kind of a D end and also a joker, they move him around, and with Jones predominantly playing inside, which is where he's really good, I think their defensive front is much better. I think in terms of what the Chiefs do defensively, they don't necessarily do a whole lot that's different. They've just gotten better at it. You kind of know what you're going to get. You know, offensively, look, the Bills, we've talked about this before. The Bills are the most quarterback-centric team in the league. They rely on Josh Allen. And you made a very interesting point about Josh and the designed run game. I actually did a piece on that in the matchup show for this week because – that's a really important thing that they do. They might not do it, you know, 10 times a game, but one thing you can be sure of, they'll do it early in the game on their first or second possession. They do it on third and short, anywhere from 2 to 6, and they will absolutely do it in the red zone. In fact, in that game against the Chiefs on the first possession on 3rd and 2, Allen ran for 22 yards. He also had a 9-yard touchdown run on a counter play. So I think that's a major factor. The Bills have clearly tried to run the ball more, and here you're seeing the 9-yard touchdown from that first matchup.
Right.
The Bills have clearly tried to run the ball more, but I think when push comes to shove, this is still a Josh Allen offense.
Right, and the other thing too, though, is, and we've seen this, when they run him early in games, if he's able to snap off a 20-yard run – he did against the Patriots last week. He had a 26-yarder.
On first drive.
On the first drive that he ran out of bounds. It was like the whole complexion of the Patriots' defense changed because they have to respect the possibility of that. My question to you, Greg, is all the time when we ask Josh in the offense about him running the ball, they say, well, we like it because we've got one more man than they do. And I understand how all works. What is the likelihood, do you believe, in light of Josh's success running the ball, that the Chiefs employ a spy? Do you know anything about Spagnuolo's history of utilizing a spy?
I can't sit here and say that he's never done it. I don't think he wants to do that. And I'm not – again, you're basically saying assign someone to Josh Allen is what you're basically saying. Well, for instance, I'll give you an example. On the 22-yard run that he had against the Chiefs in the first matchup, which did come on the first possession, basically what happened was is Singletary led through and he had no one to block. He blocked no one, and he ran for 22 yards. So you can deploy a spy, but because of the numbers game, you do actually have a blocker for that spy. It's not as if you don't have a blocker.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that necessarily helps. I'm not smart enough to know all those intricacies of defense and how that might be coached. But, you know, that automatically does not stop the quarterback design run game.
And the cold run game to Josh Allen, the quarterback, is something that the Bills have that not a lot of other teams can deploy to that extent. And as you said, I've said it a couple of times on the show and over the years, I said it about Cam Newton as well. They're the best short yardage goal line running back in the league. Because they got the ball in their hands every time, and you gotta deal with it, even if it's not the called play. And I think their ability to call that, and even with Josh in the running game on the 9-yard run we've been watching, it's wildcat every snap.
Correct. And they've done such a good job now because, you know, one of the things that stood out watching tape, and I know you guys have seen this as well, is Isaiah McKenzie. I mean, we're not going to sit here and say he's Deebo Samuel because he's not. But clearly, they're using him in the backfield more. They're using him in motion more. It'll be interesting to see because my feeling about McKenzie versus Beasley is if you're going, if you feel based on your tape study that you're going to get more man coverage, then McKenzie is a really, he's the better option than Beasley. If you feel in given situations you're going to get zone coverage, Beasley is the better option because Beasley has such a great feel for finding and settling in zone voids. But if you're, if you feel you're going to get man, whatever that down and distance is based on your film study, then McKenzie, because he can run away from man coverage.
And then with the Chiefs defensively in the AFC title game last year, they went heavy dime. And it, for the most part, it kind of held the Bills' offense in check to a certain extent. Again, we're expecting things to change, and we know that Tyrann Mathieu is kind of their wild card player. He just kind of roams around sometimes with no real coverage assignment. Maybe just kind of get into how they use him most recently.
For sure. First of all, they do play a lot of dime. They play among the highest percentage of dime personnel of any defense in the league. It's I believe, over 25%. I would not expect that to change, Chris, because that's what they do. I'd be really surprised if within 1 week you're going to see a dramatic, dramatic change in their use of personnel. But speaking directly about Tyrann Mathieu, what they do a lot of, and I think you'll see it this week, is they also play a lot of cover two, but it's how they get to it. Now, in cover two, Mathieu is their middle hole defender. You know, everybody thinks Tampa 2, you have a linebacker that kind of runs that middle. Well, Mathieu is that guy. And the reason he is that guy is because he has such a great feel and understanding of routes. And he has and because they like to disguise it with a lot of late movement, he is really good getting into that middle hole area. And I think I would expect them to do that. I think Josh Allen has advanced to the point where maybe a year or so ago, people would have felt that, hey, you can get him with disguise and late movement. And I'm not going to sit here and say you'll never get a quarterback with late movement. I've seen, you know, veterans who've been in the league 12 years be, you know, be hurt by that. But I think that Steve Spagnuolo will feel that, hey, let's disguise, let's move late, let's make Josh Allen have to think after the ball snapped. And even though he's a great second reaction movement player, if you can get a quarterback doing that and playing a little frenetically, you'd rather do that than have a quarterback just feel comfortable sitting in the pocket.
If they do play dime in the percentages you're talking about, or maybe even a little more.
And they will. Whatever, they will.
Is their dime personnel package good enough to stop the Bills' running game in its current state?
Well, they kind of move people around. Sorensen very often, and he's not a big guy, Daniel Sorensen. He started early in the year, and then they moved Thornhill into the starting safety, and right. Sorensen became the dime player.
Yeah, that
player.
Happened. That happened in week six,
right after the Bills came.
Yeah. Well, they probably wanted to do it after the dig 61-yard completion when Sorensen, looked like a slow safety. But you're right about that. So he's the dime. Often he lines up in the box. They still at times match him up to the tight end when they play man, which to me would not be a good matchup this week against Dawson Knox. So I'm very curious to see what Steve Spagnuolo will do because, you know, I think there are some troublesome matchups in this game for the Chiefs on the back end. You know, they've got to be able to generate pressure up front. But they will play dime, Steve, for sure. I mean, they've been doing that all year. They're not all of a sudden going to play no dime.
And then with respect to the Bills' defensive approach, in the last two regular season meetings, Greg, they haven't blitzed Mahomes.
No.
They've chose to, you know, drop seven, drop eight, whatever it is, largely depend on a four-man rush. Knowing that Buffalo's four-man rush has been a lot more successful down the stretch here this season. And just to give you an idea, Greg, 22 sacks in their last five games, counting last week. That's the most in the league over that span. Do you think Leslie Frazier goes into this game confident that he can employ that same strategy and not have to blitz Patrick Mahomes much at all again?
Well, for a veteran like Leslie Frazier, who is a player and a coach, I'm not sure, Chris, the word would be confident, you know, because they don't talk like that. But I would think that would be the approach. Now, they played a lot of split safety in the last game. They played, you know, a lot of zone. They played some man coverage in the last game, two-man coverage. They actually played that at a dime in the last game. I don't know if they'll do that this time. But I would think that they would stay with the approach of a lot of zone and a four-man pressure. Look, the Chiefs are a better offense. That was in that stretch when Mahomes was kind of struggling with a lot of unnecessary random movement. He was not a comfortable quarterback. He's been a lot more comfortable over the last 6-7 weeks. And when he does move, it looks much more calculated and much more controlled. But, yeah, I can't see them blitzing. Now, that doesn't mean they'll never blitz, Chris, but it's certainly not going to be a high percentage. You know, I mean, they might find a situation where they feel, hey, you know, they're not expecting it, and we think we understand what their protection's going to be in this situation, and we feel we can break it down. But it certainly will not be high-percentage blitz, no.
How big an effect will Poyer and Hyde, or can they have? And I mean, we've seen how well they play, and we hear about how good they are back there together. Does that give Buffalo's defense a different look for Pat Mahomes than any other defense he's faced, or some of the more difficult ones? How are they going to have an effect on Mahomes?
Well, I think what can be interesting is how they deploy Hyde and Poyer. Because obviously, if you're studying tape and teams study it in far more detail than I can, there's tendencies with Poyer and Hyde, just like there's tendencies with every defense. So the question I have, and I think these guys are really smart, savvy players, is I think you can change up your tendencies a bit because those guys are so smart. And it would not surprise me to do that. If they do that, because all you're trying to do with any quarterback is make him have to do a lot of thinking after the snap of the ball, because that slows down the decision-making process, and that's what you want.
From a personnel standpoint, Greg, not playing in that Week 5 game, Chris Jones, Matt Milano, and then you have players that have emerged here at the end of the season for both teams respectively, probably most notable, McKenzie and Devin Singletary, for Buffalo, and probably Byron Pringle and Jerick McKinnon for the Chiefs. Who do you think of that group makes the biggest difference in this matchup this time around?
Well, obviously the Bills won that game. Was it 38-20? Was that the score?
Yes.
So it'd be hard for me to say Milano because they held the Chiefs to 20, but I think Milano is a really important player in their defense. I think Chris Jones is a huge, huge factor. He's a really good inside pass rusher. I assume that the left guard will be Bates. What's Darrell Williams' status?
He's fine.
He's fine.
Good to go.
He'll be right guard.
Okay. So, I mean, I think they'll feel good. You know, I think Darrell Williams has been a good player at right guard. So I think that, you know, but I still think Chris Jones is a load to handle. And he can disrupt your offensive line. So I think he's a really important player. You mentioned McKinnon. Watching that tape last week, it looked like he was shot out of a
He's 10. Electric.
Yeah, he was phenomenal, both in the run game. Obviously, they're a pass-first team, just like the Bills are. But, you know, he had 12 carries. Obviously, it was a game that it was close, actually, through much of the first half until late in the first half. But he was very effective both as a runner and as a receiver. And as you guys both know, the Chiefs have an outstanding screen game. And you're seeing a screen right here, which I did not know was coming up, but there you go. So they have an outstanding screen game, of which McKinnon can be a really foundational piece, and he really looked good last week.
Yeah, I'm almost thinking even if Edwards-Helaire is ready to go, and all indications are he is, practicing fully this week, McKinnon's going to get some run. I mean, putting an extra guy on the field like him, I mean, he's a 4'4 guy, and he's 216 pounds, Greg.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd be hard-pressed. Look, Andy Reid knows his players better than I do, clearly, but I'd be surprised if you take this guy off the field. I mean, this guy, he's dynamic. I mean, Edwards-Helaire is obviously a good player, but he hasn't played in a long time, and McKinnon is absolutely dynamic.
What do you expect from, and we were talking about this at the end of the regular season up until the Patriots game, the Bills' pass rush had come alive a little bit and led the league over the last 4 weeks of the regular season in pass rush and in sacks. What was in that, and what can we do in the big picture? Can we expect them to help with a four-man rush? How effective would you expect the Bills to be against a guy like Mahomes
who is so savvy. I mean, I don't think that's still at this point with Poyer and Hyde and Levi Wallace in the secondary, the pass rush still isn't the engine that runs that defense. How good does it have to be?
Well, I'll say this. The Chiefs' pass game has really changed. They are now very rhythmic with a really good timing feel. Mahomes hits that back foot, the ball comes out. I mean, you just have to look at someone like Tyreek Hill averaging about 11 yards per catch this year. You don't see – I know he caught the 31-yard touchdown last week against Cam Sutton, but that was a fade ball. They really have not been as vertical a pass game by design as they really weren't in Mahomes' earlier seasons. So they worked with him clearly because he had so much unnecessary movement that was causing problems for them early in the season. They've really worked with him, and he deserves a ton of credit for buying in. But this offense has become much more rhythmic. It has much more of a timing feel to it. He gets the ball out. So, you know, again, pass rush doesn't become a factor in those situations. Where it's going to have to be a factor, Steve, is when you get into the long yardage situations and the drop by the quarterback becomes deeper.
The last one we've got for you here, Greg, concerns the other AFC divisional playoff, Bengals and Titans. Bills fans are rooting for the Bengals because they know if the Bills win and the Bengals win, the AFC title game's in Buffalo. The Titans may have something to say about that, though. Knowing Derrick Henry is a possible option, does it even – my question is, I don't know that it matters terribly because they've been pretty productive with Deontay Foreman running the ball, haven't they?
Yeah, but he's still not Derrick Henry.
No.
Henry will play, and Henry – If you're activating Henry, which they will, and I don't know if they've done so yet, but they will. You're not activating him to get six carries, so he's going to be Derrick Henry. I mean, in terms of usage, we don't know what he's going to look like. But no, you're right. They've run the ball well, but that's their MO. That's what they do. Their offense is kind of built that way. So you know, we'll see. Look, I think the bigger matchup in that game, quite honestly, Chris, is I think it's the Titans front four, which you guys know well is a very, very good front four, versus that Bengals O-line, which quite honestly is not a great pass-protecting O-line.
Yeah, I think it's going to cause problems for them for sure. May want to have a lot of quick game early if you're Zach Taylor for that one.
Right.
Greg, as always, thanks very much. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, we'll catch up with you.
All right, guys, appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right, you got it. That's Greg Cosell, who's also going to be on the ESPN NFL matchup show early on the weekend, both Saturday and Sunday mornings. And they do pieces on all the playoff teams at this point in the season. So he said he's going to be doing a breakdown of the Bills and Chiefs. So be sure to catch that on ESPN. And obviously, he's also the senior producer for NFL Films. We are going to take a break here, but when we come back, we will get to your phone calls, as we've got plenty of you holding at 803-0550. We will get you guys on board when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, the final injury report is out for the Bills, and the good news is Mario Addison is good to go. He does not have any kind of designation for Sunday's game, meaning he will be available after practicing fully today. So the Bills have a clean sheet on the injury report. Everybody will be available for the Bills. We'll have to see who they choose to make inactive for Sunday's game. As for the Chiefs, head coach Andy Reid said Willie Gay, the linebacker who had the off-the-field incident earlier in the week and missed practice yesterday and the day before because of it, will play against the Bills on Sunday. He returned to practice today. One player who did not, however, is cornerback Rashad Fenton. He is basically their first corner off the bench behind Legarius Sneed and Mike Hughes. So it's not looking good for him for Sunday. He's had back problems, which made him a late scratch for last week's game for them. Looks like he may not be available again here on Sunday. That's really the only big injury of note for them. Darrell Williams has had a toe injury and hasn't practiced all week, the running back. But they've got Edwards-Helaire and Jerick McKinnon, who we were just talking about. So they shouldn't have any shortage of people that can get the job done.
Yeah, these teams are going to feel like they're pretty full strength coming into this one, I would think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But let's get to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Waiting the longest here is Dennis in Lewiston. What do you got for us, Dennis?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing, man?
Doing great. Good. What do you got for us?
Thank you once again
sure.
for having me on the show, man. I enjoy calling you guys, man. I love you guys. You know what? I was thinking about all kinds of questions, but you know what? I just want to say, let's go Buffalo. Let's just get it done. You know, I guess if I did have a question, what do you guys think? You guys always ask us as viewers and listeners as a question, what do you guys think we need to do? And can we make it? Can we get past Sunday and can we make it to the AFC Championship game? That's my question for you guys. And, hey, man, love you. I'm going to hang up. Listen to what you got to say.
All right, thanks Dennis. Go ahead.
I will say, let me just go first. Yes, they can, but they could have last year. They were good enough last year. They're good enough this year. You go back and look over the course of the regular season, and they're literally two plays away from having the one seed in this tournament. And everybody would probably have a different opinion about the Bills nationally than they do now, as good as it is, particularly given the fact that the game they hung up on the Patriots last weekend, they do that against anybody else, in fact, and people are going gaga over, particularly if you're the one seed. Yes, they can do it. The problem is there are three other teams who feel like they can do it as well. You got to play well on game day. You've got the horses. You probably had the horses for two seasons, two and a half seasons. But you got to play well on the games that matter. You got to make the plays that matter at the moments when they matter the most. That's what this team was not able to do last year in this game against Kansas City. And Kansas City was. It's the plays that they could make and they did make last week against the Patriots and week five against the Kansas City Chiefs. They've made those plays. They've had stretches where they are absolutely untouchable, offensively and defensively. If they go out and play like that, their best, even against a really good team like the Chiefs, they're going to win. That doesn't mean they're going to run off and leave the Chiefs by double digits or anything else. But they've got that under the tank to go into any place. And that goes for the Chiefs, goes for the Titans, goes for the Bengals, the Packers, the Bucks, the Niners, and the Rams. Bills could beat anyone or all of them. They've got that kind of firepower and they've got that kind of defense. But they got to play well on game day. That's all there is to it. That doesn't mean they could blast all those people off the map, that they could win by 35 against all of them, that they could hang a 40-burger on all of them. Not like that, but they can beat them on any given day, any day. But they got to do it on Sunday.
Yeah,
they got to do it on Sunday. But, yes, the Bills have the horses, the coaching, the personnel, the depth, and the health to go the distance. Absolutely they do.
All things being equal on offense, because I think both teams are pretty comparable on that side of the ball. Chiefs might have more collective team speed, but I believe the depth of talent on Buffalo's offense is more consistent in their execution. Okay, that's how I kind of see the offense is matching up, and it's pretty comparable. So knowing that, I think the number one defense has to be the difference maker in this game. You were the number one defense all season long. Now it's your time to prove it and be the difference in this game by slowing down the Chiefs' offense enough and maybe getting one or two extra possessions for your offense to go and win the game for you. The defense has to be the difference maker in this game, as I see it. Let's go back to the phones, though, and we go to Phil on a cell. Phil, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good. This has been so exciting. What a great week. I just wanted to have – I had a couple of things. At the game on last weekend, I got a pair of Zubas, because I got another pair that I had stolen from me, and I haven't taken them off the whole week. And that game was like a dream, just watching it. It seemed like we were watching a movie, or like somebody played Madden that was like a pro doing that, and that was just amazing. The other thing is I wanted to give big props to A.J. Klein for his play this year. I think he's been great at linebacker, and I rewatched the game from Saturday twice, and I also rewatched the earlier game from week five, and he was around the ball and in on every tackle. He's a big dude. It seems like he's grown and put on size. He just looks great as a player. And the other thing is my prediction. It's going to be 38-20. Bills win. We have the book on Mahomes. It's out. We know what to do to stop him. Defense is going to come up with turnovers. Greg Rousseau is going to probably, you know, get another pick on the outside, set that edge, and I think we're going to romp in KC. Go Bills.
All right, go Bills. Phil, good call there. I could sense the passion, but a big fan of A.J. Klein. And, you know, A.J.'s a veteran player with great instincts and has served a valuable role for those teams that will run the ball, you know, out of those base formations.
Yeah, he does have good size and good speed. He's a veteran in this defense as well. 38-20 is the last score that the Bills-Chiefs had in that game in Week 5 is the exact same score. We'll see. Now, don't forget the Bills managed or were the recipients of four turnovers by the Chiefs. If the Chiefs turn it over four times Sunday, they'll lose again.
Could be another 18-point game. I don't know that A.J. Klein
doubt
will
they will,
see
but we'll see.
I don't know that A.J. Klein will see as much of the field this week, knowing how often the Chiefs are in 11 personnel. But we'll see. We'll see if he gets an opportunity to get on the field this week. We go to Bob in Amherst next. What do you got for us, Bob?
Hey, God, I'm so excited for this game. I feel like a 10-year-old waiting for to show up.
That's great.
This is going to be great. I also... I've got a new favorite quarterback in the NFL that doesn't wear a Bills uniform. Of course, I love all the Bills quarterbacks, but Ryan Fitzpatrick's my new favorite NFL quarterback that doesn't wear a Bills uniform. So I have a question that maybe you can help out.
Sure.
So you guys were talking about what Boogie Basham did in the first Kansas City game about how he kind of spied Patrick Mahomes and didn't rush him. So what's the difference between doing that and, like, what the Patriots did to Josh Allen in the game in New England?
Well, one of the reasons it was different was because Boogie was, like, standing right in front of Mahomes.
Yeah, and he wasn't spying. It was just an extension of the play off script.
Boogie chased him out there and got ahead of him. That's one thing. And a spy, I mean, a spy is off the line of scrimmage as well, usually, and they're not that close. And that's what gave Josh the room to come out and give Judon a stab step and then get around him and outrun him down the sideline. That's two different things.
Usually a spy is a linebacker, maybe a safety on a quarterback, that is. And we discussed that just last segment with Greg Cosell, who said, well, if Josh Allen's running, it's still not an advantage because he's still going to have a blocker to put on the spy because it's 11-on-10, essentially. So, yeah, I don't know that the Chiefs will employ that after hearing the answer from Greg. There are two linebackers that play in the nickel package, though, are pretty athletic. Nick Bolton and Willie Gay, two young players who can really run. And I'm trying to remember. I'm going to have to look it up. Because for some reason, I thought Willie Gay was nicked up and did not play in that game back in Week 5, but I'm going to have to double-check on that. I know Chris Jones wasn't in, and Frank Clark played but had a hamstring injury and really wasn't effective. All those guys are healthy now and ready to roll. So the Chiefs are a healthy bunch on defense as well.
This coming out, it's being reported now that Derrick Henry is supposed to start for the Titans on their game.
I also read, because he addressed the media yesterday, and he said he's going to play with an orthotic in his foot, in his shoe, his foot. Which, you know, you say, well, it's Derrick Henry. How's that going to impact him? He's got it in there for a reason. So I'm very curious if it impacts his level of play at all. I would say probably not.
I'm shocked he doesn't play with orthotics anyway. I mean,
But it's based on being so soon removed from the surgery he had. I guess it's an extra layer of protection, so to speak.
Orthotics are the way to go no matter what you're doing. But, that will really help him a lot, I'm sure, the orthotic will, if he's never worn one before. He'll probably wear them on both feet, actually. But, it seems prudent to give the guy an orthotic, you know, if not a special tape job and all the other yiggity-yak they do. We'll see. But if he's going to start, he must feel pretty good.
Oh, yeah, and he must have looked pretty good to the coaching staff.
How fresh do you think that dude
Oh, are you kidding me? As a daisy.
You guys, listen, I'm going to jump out to the league. In fact, I'm going to be still be one of the top 10 or 15 rushers in the league when I come back. I'm going to take a break for about 2 months. I'm going to get my little foot fixed up, take a rest. You guys got this the rest of the way, and I'm going to come back and help out.
I mean, if he's good to go,
oh, man,
with the fresh legs that he has, they might run him 40 times. They might do it. If yeah, they're in the lead.
Think about it. What are they losing? It's nothing. He already had
win or go home time now.
He already, at, I don't know, was it week eight he left? Week eight or nine? He already had a full season of work before he got hurt halfway through the season or less than halfway through the season.
So now it's just, it's grind
it's
time.
It's gravy.
Now. Yeah.
They don't get run that guy 50 times.
They might do it if they're ahead.
They're good with, they got to the one seed without him. They went 6-2.
Yeah. Crazy. Let's go to Mary in Tonawanda. Mary, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi, guys. I just have a question about officiating.
Okay.
What accountability do they have? We've seen time and time again these horrific calls. Do they have any consequence for them?
Yeah, yes. They do. They do. And it happens during the regular season. They just get downgraded, and they rank them all against each other.
They're graded by the coaching staffs that had them for a game. Those coaches send in reports based on what they feel, how well the crew did. Did they miss anything? Do you have an issue with any of the calls that were made? Yada, 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 yada. And those grading reports are added up by the director of officiating. And the highest rated crews at the end of the regular season are the ones that get the playoff game assignments. And even then, you could be subject to discipline. In the Raiders-Bengals game last week,
exactly.
There was a big snafu. That crew has been bounced from the playoffs. They've been bounced. They're not going to officiate another game. So, yes, there are consequences.
And then you think about this as well. Not only do they, you know, here's one caveat. Now, certainly they are held accountable. And good calls are reward. You know, there's good calls, there's bad calls and all of that. But here's the thing, too. It's a really hard job. It's a very specialized job. And you can bounce them from the playoffs and all that, but you still need a bunch of guys to do this job. And there isn't like they got like 9 crews waiting in the wings to come in here.
So what Steve is saying is don't make it so punitive that nobody wants to do it.
Right. I mean, that's the thing.
Go Bills, Mary. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Yeah. You don't want to make it so punitive that nobody wants to do the job.
Right. Or you can make it so lucrative that everybody wants to do it, and then you got your pick, which maybe if you make it full time, they might now. I better be quiet.
You're all right. Break time for us here. When Steve and I come back, we will let you know the latest from the Giants and what's going on down there. They now have their GM, who is now former assistant GM for the Bills, Joe Shane. But Brian Daboll is said to be one of the favorites for the head coaching post. But there's another coach who has just been fired in the last couple of weeks that could be fighting for the job tooth and nail alongside him. We'll let you know who that is next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Back on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. New York Post reporter and columnist Ian O'Connor, sports reporter and columnist Ian O'Connor, tweeted this out a little while ago. John Mara, the owner of the Giants, reportedly reached out to Brian Flores a couple of nights ago. This is before Joe Shane was officially named GM of the Giants today. Very good conversation. Mara assured Flores that he is a serious candidate and that the Giants will be willing to eat money to clear up cap space. O'Connor says this could be a Flores-Dable steel cage match for the head coaching job.
Well, I think they're both great. We had a lot of respect for Flores when he was with Miami. We thought he did a really nice job, and we don't know the situation the way it was in Miami and why things went down the way they did. A lot of people, not just you and me, but a lot of people around the country were raising their eyebrows when the Dolphins decided to go away from Flores, apparently and clearly because of what was said afterwards by the organization. Flores wanted to say, hey, we've got to do this, this, and this, and the Dolphins said, we're not going to do that, and there was a philosophical difference. If you're a football team and you don't listen to the football side of your organization, you're an idiot. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But that's why these things are done. The ownership, whatever, the personnel side of it didn't want to do it the way Flores wanted to do it. and they parted ways because of it. Flores is a guy who knows what's going on.
Yeah.
I got a lot of respect for him.
The Broncos are interviewing Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City later today in what is expected to be the last of their 10 head coaching interviews. We'll see where the Broncos go from here on their head coaching front as the carousel continues to turn. That's it for us here this week. We remind you, our Bills by the Numbers podcast is out for your selection on all your podcast platforms.